Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron. We have a special guest with us that some of you may know and recognize, but let's...
Good, Bruce, and... You know, hello to our guests again. Excited to hear from him here today. As usual, he's always got such great insight for us. Bruce, what's going on with our Cowboys, though, before we get into all that?
Magical onside kick from, a week ago, but last night, not so good, huh?
Gosh. They could be 0-3, really.
Yeah, they could.
But, yeah, I mean, the coaching seems a little bit better, but I'm just frustrated. You know, I carve out my Sunday to watch the Cowboys, and they keep doing the same bullshit every freaking week.
Yep. It's like Groundhog Day watching those guys.
I know. Merry go round and round. So, but it's a nice, another beautiful day out here. Had a good weekend. You know, hit some golf balls, did a little prep work for the week here this week. For me, I've got a big week with a couple clients, and, you know, we're really digging into the realms of building their alliance program from the ground up. So we're right in the thick of that. They're trying to go IPO in 3 years, I think.
Nice.
Folks out there, so... Right in the thick of that, which is why I've missed a couple more of these podcasts than I would really like to, for that matter. But it's all good. It's all good. What's going on out there in Texas today?
It's the same. It's a beautiful day. Sunshine. What, 70s, I guess?
74
yeah.
It was.
Yeah. So fall here, man, kind of. And enjoying that weather yeah, we're, you know, working on a project like I had a few weeks ago here in locally in town. And, of course, continuing with our federal consulting, which we'll dive into here in a few minutes. And watching the SEC network, man, we got the Aggies who barely beat Vanderbilt, man. If they barely pulled that out, it's going to be a long season. Yeah, tough season. And Jose is no stranger to A&M as well. He's had children go through there.
What other schools? Any other competing schools?
No, both of them graduated from A&M.
And that's just the luck of the draw. That's not.
Well, Bruce, see, now you're cheating. That's why I understand why you and him are, you know, all linked up there. You got your little brotherhood thing going on. That's fine. That's fine. I'll be outnumbered as the
long one here. Yeah. Well, it's just a tough time everywhere, I think. Hey, have you been to the SoFi Stadium out there in Los Angeles? Have you seen it?
You know what? I've driven by it. I got out, but this was before it was finished, to be honest. I haven't seen the finished stadium.
Was it as marvelous as Jerry World or not quite Jerry World?
Much more marvelous than Jerry World. Jerry's gonna probably have to build a new stadium now because he's been out and done. So the SoFi, or however you pronounce it, SoFi Stadium, $5 billion. Jerry's was, I think, 1.5. So
okay. Cool.
And part of that, by the way, is because they wanted a stadium that could facilitate for the Olympics, obviously.
Oh, that's right. Okay. That's right. Yeah. So they could go all in and do that. So I've flown over it under construction not too long ago. It was fantabulous. Just, you know, you're flying over LA and you see this huge
monstrosity. Yeah.
I can't wait to get out there and see it. and can't wait to get out on the road. Even Jose and I are trying to cook up a trip too, so we're trying to get back on the road a little bit post acute COVID.
Well, right. Why don't you guys kick things off here? I mean, I know I've been watching on Facebook. You guys are crushing it as far as building your community goes. I feel like every day, or maybe it's every, I don't know how often you announce them, but like every time you do an announcement for your community, it's like 5 people, 8 people, like you're not fucking around. You guys are.
To borrow a Justin Nimmergood term, or the tribe on First Step Acts, up to 2,700. So Justin, thanks to you and your entrepreneurship, couldn't have done it without those words of wisdom. You're not Z, you're millennial, words of wisdom, not Z. So
no, I'm not Z, that's my brother.
You're an old man now, man. You're old.
One last comment. I actually do feel like an old man, because this weekend, I was getting ready for, I was going to go out to the pool for a little bit, meet up with some people, putting some sunscreen on. And I look in the mirror, I'm like, there's this long hair that I don't recognize.
Oh, no.
And it's a gray hair.
Oh.
At least you have hair, man. You know?
But those first ones, they get kind of crazy and wild, and then with time, it goes natural. But bless your heart. Well, welcome to the club, man.
Yeah,
I think you're going to put salt and pepper soon. It's happening, Bruce. It's happening.
Well, it'll give you that distinguishment that's even better than having a master's from Pepperdine. I think it'll add it'll be a value add to your proposition.
I think so. I've had a lot of positive feedback recently. So.
Okay. All right. One gray hair goes a long way, brother. Sure does. Okay, man.
Tell our listeners about what you guys have been up to. You guys are building something pretty special over there.
Yeah, we continue to have our federal prison consulting side here that we're doing, of course, with COVID-19 and how that, activity is waxing and waning. We're going to talk about some of the COVID activities, and if you hand this about this stuff for you, but we have an exciting second part of our show today. It is exciting. We're going to talk about a new disciplinary infraction that is kind of on the order of something that you see on TV. So you're going to want to stay tuned, Justin, for sure. The second part of the program, as we discuss an exciting new incident report code that could literally save lives of inmates not getting killed by other inmates. So stay tuned for that if you can.
It's long overdue. Long overdue.
Yeah.
It's been on the works for years. I mean, for decades now. And finally it came to black and white.
Yeah, it's come to fruition. And we just got to cut through this COVID stuff first so I can get to that incident report, because that's just a lot of fun and some good anecdotes we both have about that, since we're prison guys at heart. So
there'll be less shanking of other inmates. That's good.
Yes. It's good for life safety and being good stewards of the public trust in terms of not providing tertiary medical services for stabbed people. So anyhow, we'll get to that in a minute. So with COVID, Ms. Santana, by the way, Jose Santana, everybody, our special guest yet again with this. Jose is chief consultant for the Federal Prison Authority and a longtime Bureau of Prisons administrator, being the chief of the Designation Sentence Computation Center. So I just couldn't have another individual that is more knowledgeable about Federal Bureau of Prisons practices than Mr. Santana. So Jose, welcome back.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Bruce, for having me again. It's always a pleasure to, attend a LA talk. And one of the main things that I keep on being brought to our attention and kind of resurfaces every other conversation with our clients is compassionate release. And, you know, the term compassionate release means what it says and says what it means, because it's a release for compassion of an inmate. And those are rarely granted. There are specific guidelines, specific requirements that an inmate must meet.
But let's think of, hold that thought. So here's the thinking, is that COVID-19 is out there. There's the spread of COVID. COVID is, you know, right, is potentially very dangerous to people. And so people are confusing, right? They're thinking, oh, I want to have my loved one granted a compassionate release because of COVID, or because of some of the potential risk factors. While those risk factors are real and there, the word compassionate release really isn't the vehicle. And so that's what we're going to, that's what you're going
to
clarify.
And that's why we wanted to get to this point where, as of the CARES Act, the Attorney General's memo of March and April and subsequent memos that the Bureau put out, compassionate release is not the vehicle for review or consideration of an inmate for early release or reduction in sentence, or for a home confinement consideration under the CARES Act or the Attorney General's memo. Many of our clients that have come to us have had retained a good jobs in putting out motions and filing motions for compassionate release under specific requirements that need to be met for compassionate release. And we could discuss this hour, 8 hour session and discussions of what compassionate release is and how the process is. Qualifies for it under First Step Act or under reduction in sentence. So the reduction, a lot of discretion and authority to grant an early release of an inmate under home confinement under the CARES Act and the COVID,
right, so
consideration.
So CARES Act is probably a better vehicle and a more accurate vehicle, because there was guidelines, or there are guidelines. Now remember, guidelines, not policies, guidelines, right? Because we're operating in an emergency capacity. I mean the Bureau of Prisons. And so these guidelines are all predicated on an inmate's risk to society. So if we're going to do something, if the BOP is going to release somebody to home confinement for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and even 6 years on home confinement, some of these gentlemen that we've seen, they want a low-risk person to put back out into society in home confinement. So what's that made of? Well, that's a good question. Let's talk about that for a second. That's made up of a mixture of static and dynamic risk factors that every person has, or every inmate has: their age, their crime, how do they have any prior crimes? Is this particular crime a crime of violence? Are they a sex offender? Was a gun involved? What are some more of the typical, how much time have they served on their sentence? Incident reports.
Incident reports. Are they attached to a security threat group?
A gang.
Do they have terroristic nexus? Do they have escape risk? Do they have violence in their case? All those situations. Do they have risk factors? What's their care level?
For health care.
Risk factors for COVID. What's their care level for health? What's their mental health status? So all those conditions. If they're granted home confinement approval, do they have the means to support themselves medically? Do they have health insurance? Are they financially stable? Do they have a stable residence? Are they going to be living in a place where it's not suitable for somebody that's coming out of prison to live in? So do they have a telephone landline?
Of the jurisdictions, you still need to have an old school landline to run your home confinement your monitoring bracelet.
Do they have access to internet or Wi-Fi? Mm-hmm. That's if not a landline. Right. There are numerous, a gamut of factors that are considered into that. And actually, I got to give the Bureau of Prisons props. They have been reviewing slowly but surely many of these cases. I've seen cases that have been granted home confinement that actually have been released, inmates that have been in prison for 3 or 4 months and they mm-hmm. have risk factors and have a sentence of 4 or 5 years to serve, and they're already out on home confinement. So there's numerous cases that we have assisted with behind the scenes, and it's been challenging, but the Bureau of Prisons has, I consider, move fast considering the bureaucracy of the federal government. So they have been a slow in certain institutions that we have to pry and communicate with, but they have moved. Not at the pace we wanted to in certain places, and not at the numbers we wanted to, but they have reviewed the cases, submitted them, and have been considered and approved.
Yeah. Probably several thousand total, right?
Yes.
And we've assisted quite a few in our practice. Again, you know, with interfacing with attorneys and family members, and also our correspondence with BOP officials, with laser specificity and those type of things to help the consideration. Process, you know, and we had a show a few weeks ago, I think, Jose, where we talked about federal probation needs to do a home check before the person gets out of prison onto home confinement. So the federal probation office of wherever that inmate's releasing to has to approve of the home and do a home inspection. That takes place now in two flavors. One is the live home inspection, but now they're doing Zoom and videos where you have to show your house, you know, through the phone and this and that, and get your approval from probation, and that's another thing. You know, we've seen people that qualified on the BOP end, but either the prosecutor didn't like the inmate, didn't want them to come back, or there was a change of district in probation. They were releasing to another place. From the place that they had been
sentencing,
from the sentencing jurisdiction, and that created a delay. Meanwhile, the family members are really upset and calling us and whatever else, and like, oh my gosh, that's why we usually need to see the pre-sentence report to see where the sentencing district was and make sure that lines up, because if it doesn't, it's going to take an extra process and extra steps in the process to get that change of district and change of location approved. It's a pretty complex equation with a lot of different variables, and lastly, another thing I wanted, this morning we had this conversation with a young lady, well, she sounded young, but she's going to be going into a women's federal prison for 24 months, and was asking us about early release, First Step Act, Second Chance Act, how much time would I have, you know, she gets the full 54 days per year per the First Step Act, you know, the prison reform bill, and then kind of figuring out some things that she may or may not be eligible for, but I lost my point. What was my point on that? I don't know, but
how much time she has to serve before she gets out, if she's eligible for First Step Act,
right.
Or even COVID review.
Yeah.
She's got a kidney or liver disease or something. That really doesn't make a difference.
Right.
You have to look at what the PSR contains, right. You know, and really on her health issues. But that's irrelevant. She really wanted to know if she was eligible for First Step Act, Second Chance Act, right. Or even COVID CARES Act consideration. And we said, hold your horses, not so fast. You haven't even voluntarily surrendered
right.
yet. And so she was just sentenced last week.
Just since a week ago. Then I'll just finish up on this because I know you guys love to hear these details on these cases. But then she calls back about 15 minutes ago when we were in another meeting, and she says, "Hey, can the judge sentence me to home confinement?" And I just thought, well, first of all, you're not in the Federal Bureau of Prisons yet. You're under the care of either the U.S. Marshals or the courts right now. So if the judge wanted to do a direct home commitment, she would have done so and not sentenced you to federal prison for 24 months, knowing that Christmas is coming out and some other things are coming out. And she's, you know, thinking that that the judge said that she didn't want her to self-surrender to a prison if she had to go to, well, she's going to prison, you know, during the holidays. But you know what? The Bureau of Prisons has that discretion, right? I mean, the Bureau of Prisons could put her in prison in Halloween, you know what I mean? Or Thanksgiving. So there's really no, it's just really interesting. You know, once you leave the courts, you're, and then you're sentenced, you're really under the care of the Attorney General's office in the executive branch and no longer the judicial branch. And it's just a different place to be. But those folks that are in between, kind of a no man's land, right? They've been sentenced, but they're not inside of a BOP institution. They're kind of in limbo.
It's that limbo. Yeah, that's that limbo where they have to interact with either the U.S. Marshals or the U.S. Probation Office, which will tell them where they were designated to by the Bureau of Prisons whenever that takes place. But it usually takes 2 or 3 weeks to get all the paperwork to the DSCC for a designation. If they're quick enough, the marshals request designations electronically, sends the court documents to the DSCC for designation. But it usually takes 2 or 3 weeks for the statement of reasons to get signed by the judge. So that's where it is with this case, and that's where it's at. So,
okay. Anything under that CARES Act or COVID updates before we go into?
No, I think that, you know, again, we go back to what has been the trends here with our consulting practice. Recently, the clients have come to us with sex offenders, individuals that are sex offenders who wants to be having early release under the CARES Act, and that's not going to happen. Yeah. Yeah. Also with inmates that have life sentences,
right.
Inmates that are non-U.S. citizens. That's all, a constant.
They're precluded, and there's no such thing as a nonviolent sex offense. We get that a whole lot. My loved one is a nonviolent sex offender because he downloaded child porn. No, that's still a crime of violence. That's still a public safety factor. That person will never be placed in a federal prison camp. That is a greater increased security concern. So even though it was a non-contact sex offense, a sex offense, all sex offenses are considered crimes of violence in that respect.
So they'll have a public safety factor of sex offender, which by consequence means putting them at a low security facility inside a secure structure, not at a minimum security camp, which is an open place.
Armed perimeter patrols.
Right. Defense. And that's the difference. So.
Yeah. When you talk about 924Cs, we get a little bit of those.
A little bit of that. Also, that's been one of the trends. Inmates that have been sentenced under 18 United States Code 924, 924C, 924C1, those are crimes of violence. Those individuals were furthering conspiracy or drug trafficking act with those, and the Bureau will look at that for certain benefits such as First Step Act, RDAP consideration, 3621E eligibility.
Release consideration.
And if you don't know the terms, please let us know. Write us 3621E
is a benefit release,
reduction in sentence for completing the residential drug abuse program, the RDAP program.
And we don't have too much time, but that particular gun statute is interesting because obviously a gun by many standards is a violent type of thing. The 924C, sometimes you see these guys go into camps, right? And so they're in camps and they have that gun involvement, and it's a case by case basis.
Yes.
Please, for the love of God, don't compare. You don't have your loved one compare them with this other guy who had a gun and yet he got out, this and that. Like, man, every case is completely different. And we get a lot of clients, two or three or four in the same prison, and they're sitting there at night and they're calling their wives and then they're just
their mom, their wife, their brothers, their sisters, everybody is
and they're trying to compare
case.
It's not apples and apples. So anyway, and of course, the 922 is just the possession of a gun, and that's a different
41,
right?
A41, A42, those statutes are categorized as weapons, right, and crimes of violence. That's one of the trends also, the comparisons of cases between inmates in the same institutions that are being, some are being denied, some are being approved. You can't compare the facts of each case. Each case has, even if they stem out of the same series of issues, out of the same case, even the same docket, are personal. It could be age, could be medical condition of the individual, how much time they served, what the sentence length is, what their role was. And, you know, we get co-defendants that are in the same conspiracy, but each one has different roles in that conspiracy. So you can't compare the facts. And that's one of the trends that we've have seen recently, right, in our practice.
In our, yes, it's current trend. So that's, so it's really interesting. You know, it's interesting work. That's why folks have to hire. I don't have to, but it's very beneficial to have post-conviction and prison consultants like us who are former officials that understand these practices, understand these laws, and so it is very beneficial. And this is what we did, and this is great that we're able to do this as retirees and have this wealth of knowledge and be able to do something with it in a very meaningful and profound way many times. Speaking of profound, so let me get the glasses on and read to everybody. And this will be, you know, maybe Justin's still out there, but we'll see. But this is a new disciplinary code. It's going to be, let's talk about the codes first. Yeah. So there's 100 series, 200 series, 300 series, 400 series are your major disciplinary codes. So Mr. Santana, give us an overview of the different, you know, severity before we go into the...
Well, series 1, 100 will compare to a killing somebody inside a prison. Particular one that's been one of the trend series, the 108, possession of a hazardous tool. That's the correct term. And so that was brought to reports because of issues that have happened in prison. The continuing criminal enterprises going on from their cell phones, their illegal cell phones, the inmates that they have in prison, which has been a problem for management and security wise and the orderly running of an institution. So that's the serious charge, 100. 200 are fights. The moderate, greatest, moderate, high severity, high, which is fights, assaults, 299 disruption.
Disruptive conduct. We'll talk about that in a minute.
It's 200 is assault. 201 is assault. 205 is a fight.
There you go.
305 is insolence to a staff member. 400 is being unsanitary, untidy, something like that.
In your room, yeah.
In your room. So those are the severity from 100 to 400. So now recently there's been a change on an added article, right, Bruce? And this has been in the works ever since, like, in 1999 or 2000, and I'm dating myself, they prohibited inmates having pre-sentence reports
documents in their possession.
In their possessions. We used to give the PSR to the inmate back then, 1990s, when I started in the Bureau of Prisons. And in 2000, they were prohibited. It was made contraband, illegal, to have an inmate possess a pre-sentence report for the obvious reason.
And they made the property of the courts.
Yeah.
Let's see your paper.
You know. The computation sheet was. If you had a Rule 35, 5K1 added, and we used to put that in ISM, the comments of adjusted sentence because of a Rule 35 or a 5K1 cooperative.
Means you're so a rat.
You're a rat. So we avoided putting those comments, and we'd never put those comments again in the computation sheet of the inmate, which is, the inmate could have a computation sheet. So they went to that. And then after that, we avoided that. So now the inmates got PACER. Inmates, their families got PACER. So they go in the 411 network and call their families through their illegal cell phones or during visiting and said, hey, check this dude out. And see what he's got in PACER.
Sure enough, and sometimes those deals don't get sealed.
They don't.
They don't get sealed. So let me read the new. Let me read the new infraction that addresses this issue, which was only globally covered under a 299 incident report for the most part.
You could only kind of set this in disciplinary mode under the 299 disruptive conduct.
Right.
Disruptive conduct. And then you had to have an SIS investigation. The lieutenants get involved with the SIS lieutenant review and find out that these inmates were pressuring others or demanding paperwork from other inmates to see what they got in their case and see they're not chomos or they're not snitches.
Okay. Right. And so now that we're going to have this new formal incident report in policy in the books, this is really going to make the prison experience safer, or it should. It should slow down people from trying to get their paperwork. So let's go ahead and, without further ado, let's go to our scripture from, let's go to our reading here. Disciplinary Code 231, which is requesting, demanding, pressuring, or otherwise intentionally creating his or her own court documents for any unauthorized purpose to another inmate. All right, so this is it. You cannot be sharing court documents or information even, but the court documents to another inmate. And it certainly should be devoid of demanding or pressuring or even requesting this information. Think about how many, just one example, how many middle-aged guys that go into federal prison and they come out. They go into the yard and they get, you know, let's see what's going on there. And we got to get rid of that. Okay. Are we back? Hopefully we're back. Yeah. So say they go, so they come out into the yard like, hey, because if they see a guy who's just, you know, maybe a first offender, he's in his 40s or 50s or early 60s, he's either going to be fraud or a child porn guy, usually. You know what I mean? They want to know if are they going to extort this guy? Are they going to do this guy? Whatever. So, you know, this is a way to curtail, hopefully, people trying to check other people. Go ahead.
I think it's going to be a deterrent somehow. It's going to deter some inmates from doing this, especially those that are, you know, getting ready to go home. But I think it's still going to happen. They're going to have a way of looking at this thing and finding out without, you know, the Bureau detecting it. There's many ways to do this. They'll find a clever way to get the information anyway, anyhow. But I think this disciplinary code will deter some of those instances in many places. Like, for instance, we have some clients in a very cushy,
Club
Fed situation where they were worried going to Club Fed, white-collar offenders, of being, you know, put on the axe by the inmate network on getting their information and finding out that they were, you know, individuals that had meaningful financial resources. And they didn't want that going into a camp that they were going to be screened by the inmate population and get targeted and get extorted and get beat up or even raped. They were afraid of being raped. So this, I think, will deter somehow the inmate network of finding out what the paperwork is. So they will still have ways of looking at and finding out the information.
It'll certainly, I hope, with time, Kyle, tell me this, tell me that, or whatever. And probably with technology, sadly, like Jose is saying, just every inmate's going to be checked. Somebody's going to run somebody as soon as the guy hits the compound. Somebody has a wife that's a paralegal. Somebody has a bootleg cell phone that's already has a PACER account rigged up to it to check the person. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, right? But it's true. And
that's how it is. That's how it is in that subculture in the world of prisons and corrections. And that's universal. That's not only federal prisons. That's universal. That's state. That's in globally. I mean, I've been to Japan. I've been to Guam. I've been to Puerto Rico. I've been to Hawaii, Virgin Islands, anywhere, everywhere they have this type. And the language doesn't matter. The inmates will find out what the other one was convicted because they don't want a celly that's a child molester, a rapist, a snitch.
Or Justin, if you're still there, Justin, what if somebody walked up to you on the yard? Let's say you're in a minimum security place and you're just walking the yard, lifting weights, trying to do your, and somebody goes, hey, so how was that Pepperdine DeGrazio School of Business, man? And
I don't think they would ever say that. I think they'd probably just dump me.
I don't think they'll say that.
I'm doing a business plan, man.
They'd be like, hey, white boy, do you want to get...
No, man, we'll put you in federal. We're saying low security federal, you know, Terminal Island. Or.
Well, I don't think you'll find that in a minimum security facility. Yeah. Maybe not in a low, but for sure at a medium and for sure at a high security United States Penitentiary. You'll find that.
He ain't going to go. Justin wouldn't be in those places.
I'm saying generally as the security level goes higher, that's
right. But I was just trying to mind my own business, and I had some dude walk up to me that's done a full Google search and God knows what to size.
Well, yeah, they're probably trying to wheel and deal from inside.
Yeah, for sure.
That's for sure, yeah, no doubt.
So, that is, I think that's really exciting. That's going to keep discipline hearing officers busy and opens up a whole new.
And particularly, you know, some of those shock callers at the institutions and you'll have them at minimums, you'll have them at lows, you have them at mediums, at high security facilities. But for sure, you have those networks alive and well in high security penitentiaries and mediums. Some of the lows may be here and there, sporadic, depending on the type of gang activity you have at those sites.
But what do you think the percentage of 5K1s and cooperators are in camps? I mean, half the places are rats?
I would even say more than that.
So, you know.
I would even say more than that. And at the lows, too. And keep in mind, in those adult lows, will filter out the inmates that have scaled down from greater security, high security to mediums and mediums to lows. And that's where it's at. So that's particularly the sex offenders because they won't go below a low security facility.
Yeah, they're gonna stay in a controlled environment.
And you know, one thing that's interesting about this Code 231, Bruce, is that the Bureau just put this out to the public, to knowledge, to, you know, consulting firms that have received these and some of us that are in this business, but they still have not publicized this yet. I haven't seen it in the BOP website. I haven't seen it, the corresponding change notice to the program statement. So it's about to come out. So it's not yet published. So.
Yeah, it'll be on the BOP website, and there'll be a change notice come out, and it'll be on the BOP website. You heard it first here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. But seriously, another thing is keeping up with us on our First Step Act Facebook tribe. I know we're kind of cross-pollinating. Justin's probably not a good idea. But anyway, we have an active discussion with family members. We have people that are released. We have BOP officials. We have judges. We have every walk of life on our First Step Act Facebook group. And so I put this out there yesterday. Yeah. And people were just like, you're telling me that somebody could check my husband? You're telling me that somebody could get some kind of PACER account and check my husband? I'm like, yeah. It's just by the prospect. So if nothing else, posting this information was a real wake-up call for folks and family members. I think everybody gets checked nowadays. I mean, don't you think? Coming to the yard, you're getting checked. Somebody's checking you. It's just the way that it is with the technology, the way it is these days anyway. But that's a consideration when you're doing prison orientation and programs and how to survive being in prison and how to conduct yourself those first critical weeks of being in prison. And this will add a new element to orientation procedures.
And this is nothing new. I mean, this has been, I started in Bureau of Prison back in 91 and retired in 2017. And so this has been talked since I started in the Bureau of Prison, making this, putting it in black and white. I don't know why they decided now to come up and put it in black and white, but this is long overdue. And this was being checked before. The inmates were checking inmates when they came in the institution before the web. I mean, pre-centuries
for those Bureau these guys are asked to be locked up.
Experts that are out there. It was pre-Bureau that the pre-century.
Yeah. Let me say, these guys like, hey, tell me about yourself. Oh, and they won't. But go on, get in protective custody. I mean, they're all trying to get PC up. You can't do that at camp. But
MA Network was live, well, and functioning before the web.
Rats and sex offenders were your two big, food groups with this. But you know what? It was probably inadequately addressed from the disciplinary aspect under the 299 statute. Yeah. Having a very clear statute that clearly delineates or adds requesting, demanding, pressuring and otherwise intentionally creating a situation where an inmate is having to provide their documents to another inmate. I think they should do that. Don't you think they should do that with any of the public forms they get from team or just this type of stuff?
No, because that's general knowledge. The public form, they could have it. Actually, if you talk about public form, one of the things that we've seen is denials of home confinement, inmates not getting the documented rationale, the reason why been denied, to then file an administrative remedy. They're not getting that.
Yeah.
So those one of the things that inmates could have in their possession.
Sure.
Like administrative remedy, where he, questions any conditions.
What about sentence computation?
Sentence computation they could have, yeah. They could have the sentence computation.
You don't think that'd be a threat?
I don't think it would be a threat because there's no language there contained. Actually, we had difficulties. We wanted to know how many individuals had cooperated with the government in the Bureau of Prisons in general. And we never could be able to pull out specific data extracted because we weren't keeping track of those because we had to eliminate the practice of putting 5K1 or Rule 35 substantial condition to adjust the comp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just making cases. Man, Justin, you're doing a good job hanging in there, man. We have his avatar. He's like, yeah, I'm out of here. He's eating a sandwich. He's eating a smoothie.
I'm not eating a sandwich. I just don't want to dominate your guys' expertise.
We got a pulse over there in California. Thank you so much, man, for hanging in there. But it is kind of interesting, why now after all these years, it'd be kind of fun. We're not kind of there, we haven't made any specific inquiries as to why this is going on now. But I wonder if the COVID and then just the rash of new admissions on the rebound of COVID, or I don't know, you have any hypotheses there? I mean, I have no idea. Well,
I think, it's a 360 approach of the Bureau of Prisons because right now the movement was kind of halted. And so as they come in now, this new wave of inmates coming in,
there's going to be
a more and more intense
screening
process for the inmate population among the inmates. And plus, you can't forget that you have a new director who is a custody security guy, he knows about this. He worked in many penitentiaries. I know how he thinks of a secure institution. I think this gives management a little bit more of a way to control some population of that activity going out there.
And it makes it safer. It really does. It makes the prison safer. You want your loved one or whomever. And you can feel however it is you want to feel about criminals and crime, but you want to run a safe institution. That's just better for everybody. And also, we need to be a good steward of the public trust. Your taxpayers' money are paying for these services and for incarceration. And we want that to go in the most expeditious, safe manner possible, in that correctional administrators And we help correctional administrators make good decisions based on facts, not feelings. And, this guy should get out because he's a good guy. Now, there's other facts that oftentimes we can show that to make people a good candidate for a certain program or to fall under a certain type of release method. So there's various methods. I'm excited about that new code. It's just an exciting chapter in incident report history here yet to come. And Jose was I filled in a little bit as a disciplinary officer, but you did the same thing as a DHO.
I was an alternate.
Yeah. So we had to be familiar with all these infractions, we would apply sanctions to these infractions. Even my work, the person would be in a federal halfway house. They'd be caught drinking or insolent to the staff member. Not quite the array of acting out that I was more of an expert on certain food groups, but you had that exposure to the whole gamut.
We had to rumble sometimes with some of those individuals that got out of hand. But I think this code is a good, it gives the management of the institutions a good tool to deal with the issue that when unsanctioned or not properly sanctioned, but it's elevated now to the category that it fits. Before it was a 299, almost a 300, 299 disruptive conduct. It could have been severe, 199, if it was very, very egregious.
You know what? Maybe they wrote enough guys up for this under the 299 and they beat it. Beat it on appeal.
It could have been.
And now they're saying, we're going to close the door on these appeals and write out a policy that's fairly clear and succinct. And,
it could have been because now it's elevated to a 231 high severity, high level.
You could lose some good conduct time.
And also the way it's written is the way this it's narrated and particularly articulated there. It extends to those individuals that cooperate with inmates, such as family members or associates that are outside helping the inmate, which could be in the inmate's visiting list, which could institutions.
There you go. Late breaking epiphany here.
That's the way it is in those investigative roles when that happens.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Well, you know what? We got a minute left. Wow, there it is. Another exciting show today here on the Concierge Coaches Show, LA Talk Radio. Of course, we had Jose Santana with us. We talked about COVID-19 and CARES Act release procedures, and then we followed up with our disciplinary code 231, which I know is going to be an exciting situation moving forward. So we'll come back next week, folks, and listen to the show. We'll have something exciting for you, and see us on our social media on Instagram, The Concierge Coaches, Facebook, Concierge Coaches Show. Of course, we're on Apple Podcasts and other podcast aggregators. So we're getting out there. That's really good. I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. Jose and I can be reached at federalprisonauthority.com. And of course, our Facebook tribe, a Nimmer Goodian term, the tribe is at First Step Act. Facebook.com/First Step Act. Come see us there as well. Justin, how can folks reach you?
Yeah. Folks can reach the Nimmer Goodian tribe.
The tribe of one, man. The tribe, man.
Lastname.com, NimmerGood.com. Bruce, I think I'm going to borrow that from you.
Nimmer Goodian?
Nimmer Goodian tribe.
the Nimmer Goodian philosophy and his early writing of entrepreneurship, wherein the DeGrazio graduate said .. Oh, my God, I could go on. I'll be your publicist later on, man. We'll write
you
up
got
some.
It.
Just only Nimmer Goodian stuff. Hey, everybody. Well, thanks for coming in and seeing us. We'll see you next week on the Concierge Coast.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Bruce.
All right. We'll see y'all next time. Take care, everybody. Have a safe week. Be safe.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.